Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. All right, we are in paper 54, section 2, which is old single column, page 614. And recall from last time, besides greatly expanding on that preface and talking about some of the nature, the physics of the whole issue of figment, error, evil, sin, iniquity. There are parallels, obviously, fact, truth, etc. We went through that section on true and false liberty. And the thing that we want to definitely have at the fore of our minds again as we start up going forward is with that issue of truth. So when we were talking in that very precise way about the how that all works together, you have that immediacy of the threefold actuality of fact, truth, goodness. And in that threefold actuality, truth as an immediate element in that is the superadditive consequence of the relationship between fact and goodness. So, in that immediate way, you can understand truth embodying the associativity of between fact and goodness. But it's more than just that, because it is a super additive consequence. So it not only embodies that associativity, but it also is the essence of the whole. When you see the word truth, or if they're contrasting, falsehood, or true and false in the Revelation, you always want to ask yourself, well, now, is the main thing I'm supposed to be understanding about this use of the word truth that what they're speaking of is in relationship to the whole, that it embodies that wholeness of the cosmos, of the universal harmony? And when all is said and done, when you reflect on what they said there about true and false liberty, it's apparent that that's primarily what you want to leave that section with, is that recognition that I have this concept of liberty, but I need to have it synchronized with the whole, in conformity with the cosmos. So it's true liberty instead of false liberty. And so when you recognize that, when you think about those two basic issues that true liberty is in the context of, that we saw as we went through that section, the recognition of personal responsibility and the exercise of self-control. So think of those with that recognition about the truth of true liberty. So it's a recognition that you have a personal responsibility to the whole, to the cosmos, transcendent of any responsibility to any part or even all the parts, the sum of all the parts. That you have that super summative issue. You have a responsibility to the cosmos, and that exercise of self-control, right? You are attempting to master the self to bring it into conformity with the cosmos, to make it right with the cosmos, to possess righteousness. So, that's that's true in general, That if you have that recognition of your responsibility to the cosmos, and you've seen to it that your mindful self is a maturing reflection of that universal harmony, then anything that is that you take a hold of within that context, like liberty, will be true liberty instead of false liberty. All right, so you'll see as we start to read this next section that they're expecting you to have figured that out, what I just described, in order to pick up on what they're pointing to in the right there in that very first paragraph. So let's read that, and then we'll see specifically what I'm talking about here.
2. The theft of liberty. With the Son and in the Spirit did God project eternal Havona, and ever since has there obtained the eternal pattern of coordinate participation in creation, sharing. This pattern of sharing is the master design for every one of the sons and daughters of God who go out into space to engage in the attempt to duplicate in time the central universe of eternal perfection.
Okay. So now the first thing, just a little aside, they'll speak to it directly in a minute here, but notice how they said the attempt to duplicate. In that same spirit, the title of the section, The Theft of Liberty, I mean, technically, it's the attempted theft of liberty. Right? Because after all, in the purest sense, you have free will. Right? Genuine liberty can't be taken from you. Not in any absolute sense. And so you'll see they make that point that what was going on is the attempted theft of liberty. Like I was just saying, this issue about having in mind this conformity with the whole, with the cosmos. Notice the word that appears in that first sentence. So you start out, like John was saying, in a very poetic fashion, with the Son and in the Spirit did God project eternal Havona, and ever since has there obtained the eternal pattern of coordinate participation. As I stress over and over again, one of the first things you want to start doing is not just skipping over that word. When you see the word coordinate, that's a reference to the whole or the individuality of the whole or both. Right? It's a reference to the Paradise Trinity or the Mother or both. Okay? They did not say the eternal pattern of associative participation, which is probably what you were thinking they were saying, because you're thinking, I've got these three individuals, the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit, and they're talking about them doing something in association, it appears. It did not say that. It didn't say associative participation. It said coordinate participation. Right? The only way that they are doing what they're doing is in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. Right? That's what the word coordinate means. A coordination is not merely an associativity, it's a systematized associativity. You have a system of associations. Right? You're fundamentally dealing with the cosmos, that system where nothing gets together except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. That's what they're talking about. That's how you're going to participate with one another in a coordinate fashion, in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. The Father, Son, and Spirit did not do that in and of themselves. They did that in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. You can you can recognize that in a couple different ways in the specificity of what they're talking about, projecting eternal Havona, as it says, you know, bringing Havona into existence. Havona is that the universal Father's domain? Is that the eternal Son's domain? Is that the infinite Spirit's domain? No. That's the Paradise Trinity's domain, right? They're doing that, see, in relation to the Paradise Trinity. And when they say, you know how they often talk about this, you've got the Father and Son, and they get together in a relationship, and then the spirit point of their conjoint action, is that conjoint actor, the third person, the God of action, and that's why it says, it's with the Son and in the Spirit. Right? So the spirit point of it is always the third person. What they're doing is in the Spirit. And remember how when we went through the whole first part of the book, we recognized that the fundamental generator of so much of the beings and whatnot that populate the cosmos is generated from that relationship between the Infinite Spirit and the Paradise Trinity. That the Father and the Son are, in that mode of thinking, are in the background. Right, where the rubber is meeting the road is in that relationship between the Infinite Spirit and the Paradise Trinity. You see the Paradise Trinity there. So that's what they're getting at, and so when we recognize that we're talking about this this relation to the whole, so that what's going on is true. What they're doing is a true phenomenon. It's true creation, not false creation. What they're about. And see, this pattern of sharing. So not sharing in a simple one-to-one sense, but sharing in coordinate fashion in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. Everyone is attempting to do that, following suit from them. Like they said, is a master design for every one of the sons and daughters of God who go out into space. See, they're doing likewise. And remember, Michael, as a creator son, is trying to eventually get to being a master son. And he goes through that sevenfold process to finally get himself in full cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. Right? To be in a full mode where he can do the coordinate thing. And, there's an initial coordinate participation that he has the ability to do, but he's maxing that out and becoming a master son. So this is the master pattern, as they're saying there, the way everything works. That's what we should all begin to think in terms of as well. That if you want any sort of a human endeavor to go better, no matter what it is, no matter how small or how large, to think of it in those terms is everyone trying to put themselves in relation to the whole and to function through the individuality of the whole, one with another. All right, so it helps you to understand why they would say, this in the next paragraph we're about to read, why these two paragraphs would be stuck in here. Because they seem like kind of a non sequitur, right? You finally get done these two paragraphs and it's like, okay, now back to Lucifer's folly, you say, okay, we're back to, you're trying to figure out why are these two paragraphs in here? Why are we talking about projecting eternal Havona and all this sort of stuff? What on earth is the, I thought we were talking about the Lucifer rebellion, right? It's to remind you of, who started this process that everyone needs to follow like you need to follow if you want to have true liberty instead of false liberty. It needs to be a coordinate participation thing that you're doing, and not something that you think, who needs a whole and the individuality of the whole? You know, I'm an island universe and I'm fully self-contained. I am the part and the whole, you know, and off you go into iniquitous land, right? Okay, so that's the whole point. See, and it's not until you begin to recognize how to think about that word true or truth, and you don't have any way to, you know, to sort this out. You know, and also, you know, knowing that, oh, there's that coordinate word, right? All right.
To me, the pattern of sharing, and the word sharing, mm-hmm. has a little bit different connotation than the coordinate participation side of things. I mean, the word, when I saw the word sharing there, before I looked at the word sharing, I wasn't thinking of the word sharing, so to speak, and they use that as, you know, kind of try to explain us what they mean by that, and then they go on with it. Mm-hmm. And it's the master design, and sharing, you know, as you said, what's for the whole, but there is also sharing, you know, when you're not in a situation where there's more than two people. So you have,
yes,
and you can relate to that, and it seems to me that, what do you think is the spirit behind that word in terms of how it really is the, you know, the pattern of the three deities,
right,
down to us.
Right. So let's take a poignant example of two people,
please,
attempting to share a husband and a wife.
Okay.
That's a great example. And so they're going along with their life, and they appear to be sharing their life.
Or sharing something. Okay.
Right.
Or two brothers.
But right, but just, you know, just take that one example, right? They certainly appear to be sharing, but there seems to be something missing. Matter of fact, maybe there's as the years go by, there's kind of a growing tension, and they move farther and farther apart, and eventually the marriage falls apart. What's missing? It appeared, I mean, they were living in the same house, you know, and everything. They went to the grocery store together or whatever. Okay. Well, they appeared to be sharing. But, you know, by their fruits you shall know it. I mean, when all is said and done, it's like, no, they apparently weren't really sharing. They appeared to be, but they weren't really. What was missing? This distinction is vital. Right? If you want that relationship to be living, no, and so that it can't die, like I just described that relationship dying. If you want it to be living, really living, this distinction is vital. It's about that livingness. That sentence we repeat all the time. You know, these two individuals are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. They appear to be touching, but they really aren't. If they're trying to do it just one to another, rather than connecting through that which is above, the individuality of the whole, go through the individuality of the whole, through the mother one to another. And then that relationship is real. It brings, the only way to do that is to bring personality in play. Right? Two rocks can slam against each other. In the plane, two blobs of protoplasm can bump, you know, in the night, as it were, right? But if you want that relationship to be really living, right, it needs to go through the individuality of the whole. You know, it's in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. I mean, that's what they're getting at. You want a coordinate participation. You know, see, it appears that there's really only two people, but really there's a blank infinity and then two island universes? No.
I wasn't trying to dwell on just the two.
I know, but see, that's
the spirit of the whole thing of sharing, whether
but that's the whole point. That's the whole point. I mean, and see, it's we all are part of a cosmic system.
So what is the pattern of sharing that is master design? they're talking. The pattern of sharing is the master design is more, is everybody sharing in a way?
The pattern of sharing is what I was just describing about personal responsibility and self-control, right? That if you really want to have a lasting relationship with another individual, each of you first has to consecrate themselves to the whole, to the cosmos. You know, like think of it of a typical example when we talk about this. You'd like to have an ethical relationship with a business partner, for instance. The only way to have a genuine ethical relationship is for each individual to first have a moral relationship to the cosmos.
Or to the business they're in.
But no, I mean, it's, you know, if it's going to go beyond just a passing temporal phenomenon, if it's going to be any reality to it,
long-term,
right? Something that you know will actually produce something in your soul, and hence is part of eternity. You know, as opposed to just, well, the only reason we're doing this is just for the moment and a quick buck or something. Right? But if you want to really be doing something with your life, the only way to do it is for me to, you know, be involved in something real. First, I have to get myself in conformity with the cosmos. First, I have to be moral before I can be ethical. See, humans have been trying forever to be ethical without first being moral. And, you know, the big problem is no one is, until the fifth epical revelation, has known what morality is.
We use
the word, right. It's, you know, but you think about it, the mores system is really kind of just, you know, this relative ethics that you have, right? You can get this, it can appear that you're identifying with something transcendent of the group. You know, each is, and then you're interacting as individuals in the group, but you aren't really. I mean, you know, because really that Mori system is just a bottom-up expression of the group, right? Of the individual members. You need to start with something that's transcendent of any part. First, you need to start with the whole. If I want to have a better relationship with my wife, I need to first be more real.
That's what she said all the time.
I need to get myself in conformity with the cosmos to some degree. So there's some sort of an objective phenomenon. We don't just want a subjective thing. We want it to be real. We want it to be an objective phenomenon. Well, two subjective things don't magically produce an objective phenomenon. I have to make myself objective. She has to make herself objective, and then we meet in reality as two objective facts.
Right?
And that's the coordinate participation, as opposed to just an associative participation. It's not just the association of our subjective natures.
We do have associative relationships.
Yes, we do.
I see,
but you're trying to go beyond that. Yep.
And through the whole means God the Mother?
Yes, through the Mother, the individuality of the whole, the personal phenomenon in relation to wholeness. See, I mean, we're talking about one person engaging another person, really, not just two blobs of protoplasm interacting, but one person, you know, relating to another person, really. And you need to do that through some sort of a personality phenomenon, some personality connectivity, conduit, right? The Paradise Trinity is non-personal. You know, it's the individuality of the whole, the Mother, that's the personalizable phenomenon there. You have to be in relation to the whole, but you actually get from one to another through that personality linkage, as it were, you know, the personalization of the whole, the Mother. So, it all sounds kind of abstract, but, you know, just...
It's new.
It's very new, and it can't help but be a bit abstract to start with. That's why that no one has tried to teach us this until now. It's too abstract until now. But that's the key. That's what's missing. That's why businesses don't work. You know, aren't lasting. That's why relationships aren't lasting. It's why any institution is not lasting. It's because it isn't synchronized with the whole. It's not true. See, if the phenomenon isn't true, it's not upheld. So obviously, it doesn't last. Doesn't matter what you're talking about. It has to be true. And this is what truth means. I mean, remember, you know, the dictionary still quotes Pontius Pilate, quid est veritas, right? We haven't been able to figure out what truth is. You know, what I'm saying here is revelation, right? This is something that no human understands, what we're talking about here. What truth means, what that's about.
How do you something through the whole? How do you do it?
How do you connect one to another through the individuality of the whole? Right. It sounds like it's pretty complicated. Am I going to need a PhD? You know, in deity connectivity? No. Because all the technical details are taken care of for you. Right, by the mother. She's the physicist and takes care of all the technical details. What does it say in paper 16, section 6? All you have to do to get this process started is reflect. Take the light in cultivating reflective thinking. Right? If you choose to be a reflective thinker, not a mere thinker, not just a conscious blob of protoplasm, but something that steps above that blob, thinking blob, and knows it, and begins to try to reach out beyond it, it all happens naturally. Right? The physics. You don't have to do step one, step two, there's nothing like that. Just do that thing that it's sad to record that almost no one on this planet does. Pull back on the reins of the incessantly clamoring self and reflect. Pause. Hit the pause button. Pull back on the reins, whatever analogy you want to use. Right? Try to step back and see if you can encompass the big picture of what's going on in your life rather than just trying to more and more aggressively rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic. Right, as it sinks, as the relationship sinks, or the business sinks, or whatever. Right?
What's that little tiny rudder they put on the
right, it's very, you know, that's all you have to do, you know, and it sounds simple when you say it, but it's not. Genuine reflective thinking is not easily achievable. Right? That's the effort of becoming a genuine philosophic mind. You know, not just merely a religious mind or a scientific mind, but
you
a philosophic.
You have to be a genius to do that?
You don't have to be a genius, no. Because by grace, we're all encircled in the Holy Spirit. So even the lowliest human can do this. They may not be able to do it as vastly as some other human, but you can do it to some degree. Right?
Honest.
You have to be sincere.
Right? Yeah, you have to be loyal and humble and sincere and just and patient. And, yeah. And again, just, you know, when you say that system of associations that is, you know, a coordinate phenomenon. Wait a minute. You pull up the chart. Here's the word philosophy, and in parentheses it says system of associations. Right, you need to be a personal living philosophy, a coordinate phenomenon, not just an associative phenomenon, a coordinate phenomenon, because then and only then do you have a relationship to the greater coordinate phenomenon that is the cosmos. The cosmos is a harmony, not a mere associativity. Right? And why is the cosmos not just a mere associativity? Why isn't it just a bunch of parts bouncing off of each other? Because it's not just the Almighty. It's not just the summation. There's another half, you know, that gives you the Supreme, the Mother. Super additive consequence of a relationship between the Almighty and the Mother is the Supreme. Right? It's not, it's because you the Mother is there that it isn't just an associativity. It's a coordinate fact. She's the individuality of the whole. She's the focalization in the midst of that summation that is the Almighty, that makes it a coordination as a consequence. Yeah.
When you talk about the whole being the Mother, this is mind we're talking about. She's, are we talking cosmic mind, or
Well, I mean, the whole is many things. I mean, it's yes. Foundationally, it's deity.
But when
right?
we talk about the Mother, we're talking about mind, are we not?
The Mother, Mother at some level is a bestower of mind, yes. And, you know, and in terms of our immediate understanding of, you know, what it is that I'm trying to achieve a philosophic mind, right? Not a philosophic spirit, right? But a philosophic mind, and I want to consecrate my mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. Right? It's what you do after that consecration of will. And so it's, you know, reflective thinking. It's obviously about the mind. So all yeah, it's all that, and it's rooted in right, the Paradise Trinity is unpersonalized deity, but deity is inherently minded. Right? I mean, what we think of as mind has its higher essence in deity itself, right? And so. See, what you're fundamentally doing is going beyond some relationship to matter, mind, or spirit, but going into relationship with that which transcends those three, deity. Okay.
Every creature of every evolving universe who aspires to do the Father's will is destined to become the partner of the time-space creators in this magnificent adventure of experiential perfection attainment. Were this not true, the Father would have hardly endowed such creatures with creative free will, neither would he indwell them, actually go into partnership with them by means of his own spirit.
Okay, so they're reminding you of another element here. You know, when they talked about the sons and daughters of God who go out into space to engage in the attempt to duplicate in time the central universe of eternal perfection, probably, when you first heard that, you were thinking, oh yeah, that place that has seven circuits, you know, with a billion perfect spheres. Well, yeah, there's that part of Havona. There's also the creatures of Havona. Right? You don't have all of Havona if you just have the thingness of Havona. Right? You have to have the beingness of Havona as well. Right? They're trying to duplicate in time the wholeness of Havona. Mm-hmm. Things and beings. Right? So you are part of that process, right? You're one of the beings in the universe of universes, right? That has to get perfected, has to get synchronized with that pattern universe, things and beings, right? That pattern universe. I see. So they're reminding of that element. Were this not true, the Father would have hardly endowed such creatures with creative free will. Right? I mean, you have to be involved in this process of attempting to duplicate in time the central universe. Okay, you can't just get to place. Okay, and so there's that element. Now you're not, you're not just, you're part of this process of attempting to duplicate in time the central universe. You've been given a role in that attempted duplication. That's why you have free will. Yep.
It doesn't make sense that our free will should be different than the free will that the creatures of Havona have.
Every creature in Havona has an absolutely unique, personality. Right. So when you say duplicate in time, it's like a simple Xerox copy we're talking about here, right? That's impossible, because every personality is absolutely unique. So what are we talking about? We're talking about a duplication in a very transcendent way. The only way that they could come into, some sort of a homology, equivalence, is in some way that's transcendent of all the absolute unique personalities. It's got to be a super absolute phenomenon that's going to bring this together, transcendent of all those absolute unique personalities. Right? Where does that potential to go above the absolute come from? Right? The super absolute nature in the mother. It has to be a coordinate participation. Right? It has to transcend the even absolute individualities in association. It literally has to go co-infinite to achieve this. Right? Again, like we talked about, that's it. That's a really amazing thing to think about. For my absolute unique personality to have any relationship with your absolute unique personality, we have to go super absolute to bridge the gap. It's literally co-infinite, transcendent to the seven absolutes of infinity.
Even here in time.
Even here in time, in order to make that. So there must be something here in time that has that that nature that we can leverage off of to transcend the absolute divide that separates us. Right, that's the mother. That's the physics of the fifth epical revelation, right? This distinction is vital for in a cosmic system, like we say all the time. See, that's why that sentence is so important. It's so different than anything that any human has ever thought about how the universe works, right? It appears that the Earth and the Moon directly interact in a thing called gravitation, and you rationalize gravitation as if it was just a simple interaction like that. No, there is no such thing. It appears that way, but it isn't really that way. Individual members of a cosmic system are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. That's not just two persons. Two masses as well, the Earth and the Moon, and their gravitational relationship. Right?
Creation in general.
Right. This is a very different sort of understanding of how the universe works, and that's what see, and it's like that's what, and ever since has there obtained the eternal pattern of coordinate participation in creation. That's what's going on. See, and that's implemented through the whole and the individuality of the whole, through the Paradise Trinity and the Mother. That's the fundamental thing we've been missing. The fundamental thing we've been missing hasn't been Omnifem or Divine Counselors. the fundamental problem we've had in all of our attempts to create a worldview, to understand our experiences in reality, and is the fact that we haven't had the whole and the individuality of the whole. You know? So, you know, if you went very far, eventually you had to make, you know, you had to have a God in there, and you had to make him magical in order to make up for the fact that you didn't have the whole and the individuality of the whole. You had to have one of the parts magically also be the whole, which is illogical. That's why it's magical, right? No, his part remains a part. There's two other phenomena that you've been missing, the Paradise Trinity and the Mother. Okay, now, the other thing that's in there, we kind of pounded on that, but notice how it, you know, it threw in the bit about, in the first sentence of that second paragraph, every creature of every evolving universe who aspires to do the Father's will. It brought this in, this whole thing about to do the Father's will. So we really need to go to the paragraph up there in paper 111 and remind ourselves about what that paragraph said. So it's on page 1221, first paragraph of section 5 in paper 111. Remember that section called the Consecration of Choice? You remember how that starts out? I'm going to read that whole paragraph, and we're going to unpack the first sentence in greater detail. I want to read the whole paragraph because you go, wait a minute. So here, that first paragraph says, the doing of the will of God is nothing more or less than an exhibition of creature willingness to share the inner life with God, with the very God who has made such a creature life of inner meaning value possible. Notice the rest of the paragraph. Does this sound familiar? Sharing is godlike, divine. Look at the next sentence. Does this look familiar? God shares all with the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit, while they in turn share all things with the divine sons and spirit daughters of the universes. Wait a minute, we just read those sentences. Yes, we did. Right? They're talking about sharing. So they speak about it in the exact same terms as they did back there, you know, in paper 54. Okay, so now, you know, so it's very important, you know, when they say every creature who aspires to do the Father's will, that we know the true interpretation of that statement, the interpretation that is different than anything that any human has ever thought about what that sentence means, that they're trying to explain right here in this opening sentence that you need to burn into your head. You need to be able to just quote that verbatim. The doing of the will of God is nothing more or less than an exhibition of creature willingness to share the inner life with God. And you need to remember every word. If you skip a word, you're gonna have a false interpretation of it. Okay. So, you know, we want to know, they said the doing of the Father's will. We want to know the doing of the will of God. What is the definition of the doing of the will of God? So we can properly interpret that sentence back there in paper 54. Okay, it's nothing more or less. Okay. Let's take the less part. What would be, what's the simplest way to understand going on the less side of this definition? An exhibition of creature willingness to share the inner life with goodness. That's less. That's those who want to be spiritual but not religious. They may not recognize it, but what they're doing is they're exhibiting a creature willingness to share the inner life with goodness, but not God. Step too far, right? Because God's a person.
Personal versus impersonal.
Right. I'll share something that I'll share my inner life with something that doesn't have eyes and can't see me. Right? But I'm not going to share it with the all-seeing eye. Right? Okay. That's less. Right? It's not just an exhibition of creature willingness to share the inner life with goodness. Okay? But it's also nothing more. Okay? Simplest way to understand the more is it has not, what the definition of doing the will of God has absolutely nothing to do with the outer life. Nothing to do with the outer life. Okay, so that blows up any thought that any human has ever had. Everyone for the last million years has thought that the, you know, that doing God's will had something to do with your outer life.
Soup kitchens.
Nothing to do with the outer life. Zero. Okay, so you've just wiped the slate clean. You should have no idea what on earth the doing will of God is now. What is it? Okay? So it's not more like that. Just the inner life. Nothing with the outer life. Okay? But it's even more than that because you got to think about the rest of it. Okay? It doesn't say nothing more or less than sharing the inner life with God. Okay? Doing the will of God is not actually sharing the inner life with God. You see that? That's more. You've taken it too far. It's nothing more. Not even that much more. Not even to the point where you're actually sharing the inner life with God. Because we're talking, by God here, we mean the Father. Okay? The Father is purely existential, not experiential. Deity. Okay? An exhibition of creature willingness to share. Right? Remember, will is potential. The exercise of will, the actualization of that potential, that's volition. I'm not talking about volition. Right? You know, so you're thinking the doing of the will, wouldn't that be exercising the will? So there's volition, and of course my volition is going to, you know, activate my mind, and that's going to activate my body, and that's going to lead to outer life manifestations. And no.
Magic.
No, you've gone too far. It's only back at that, a very initiating step. The Father's the initiator and nothing more. So doing the will of God is nothing more than just what's there at that initiator place, right? The exhibition of creature willingness only. Just willingness to share, not actual sharing. Just the willingness to share. And that's the doing of the will of the Father. It's like, well, that just seems like so nothing.
Right.
Right? Yeah, that's what everyone said when Machaventa tried to explain this. That's what everyone said when Jesus tried to explain this. That's what everyone still says when the revelators try to explain it in the fifth epical revelation. So it's gotta have something to do with the way I move my mouth or my hands or my feet or something. Right? Right? It's gotta have some sort of works righteousness to it. No. Nothing more. Okay, so now that you've really focused in on it, when I say that you have two consecrations, and the first is consecrating your will to the perfect will of God the Father. Okay, and your first thought when I say, oh yeah, that's all about, I've got all these outer life things that are expected of me, you know, if I'm doing the will of God. No. What is that consecration about? Will is potential. So, reword that. The first consecration, the consecration of your potential to the perfect potential of God the Father. That's that first consecration. There's no actuality. There's only potentiality. in that consecration. The consecration of your will, your potential, your personal potential, to the perfect personal potential of God the Father. Not consecration of volition, just consecration of will.
Is that the process of perfecting?
You haven't started it, so there's no perfecting at all yet, right? It's not consecrating your will to the perfecting will of God the Father. There is no perfecting. He's existential deity. It's perfect or nothing, right? He has a perfect will, a perfect potential, and you want to consecrate your potential to that perfect potential. You want to set your sight, set the goal, potentialize your perfectingness by consecrating the potential for perfectingness to a perfect potential. And then you're going to do the other consecration. You're going to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, and that potential is going to begin to actualize.
Takes a while.
Okay. But see, you short-circuit any perfectingness if you don't first potentialize it. You can't actualize nothing. You can only actualize a potential. You have to potentialize your nature first, consecrating your potential, your will, to the perfect potential, the perfect will of God the Father. And then consecrating your mind over an eternity of processes, right? Yeah. Consecrating your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. Yeah, and there's an endless hierarchy of mother, right? So, yeah, you're consecrating, you're working out that consecration from here to eternity. Okay.
And then you have both consecrations working in harmony, and you feel like you have two parents, and it's not a separate dichotomy thing. Right.
Yes,
the one parent
is the means for the potential for harmony. And the other parent is the mean for the actuality of harmony. The mother is the actuality of harmony. The father is the potentiality of harmony. That's the difference between your two parents. You know, and prior magical worldviews don't have only a father, and so he's both potential and actual. Both God without and God within. You know, both God as transcendence and God as immanence. He's magical. He's illogical. Right?
I think that's why people get depressed so easy, too, is they have that one consecration that falls apart all the time.
Yeah.
It doesn't amount to anything.
Yeah, right. They think, oh, I've consecrated my will. Now I'm an infinite actuality. Well, you know, you get delusioned pretty fast with that initial thought, don't you? Yeah.
I'm nothing again.
No. The only thing that you can do is potentialize with the consecration of will. That's why it's curiously doesn't seem to have any actuality to it. Your relationship still falls apart. Right? What does it say again? You know, when you go to paper 195 and it's talking about second milers. Well, you don't need to turn there. Let's see if I can find it. Where in the heck is that? Right here. So you have all of these people who have very, very earnestly, to the ends of their earnestness, have consecrated their wills to the perfect will of God the Father. And it says what about that effort? But mankind languishes and stumbles along in moral darkness. First milers, consecration of will. Right, you've just potentialized the system. You haven't actualized anything, so of course you're still going to languish and stumble along in moral darkness. Moral is about conformity with the cosmos. The consecration of your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. Right? No degree of consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father gives you any morality. Right? It doesn't give you any actuality. It just gives you potentiality. It gives you potential to be moral, But it doesn't magically make you moral. And so mankind languishes and stumbles along in moral darkness still. Right? You know, see, you know, why is that? See, again, it's like, what's missing? The other consecration, the other parent. You know, it's in relationship to the mother that you're moral, not the father. Father just potentializes it, doesn't actualize it. You know, and
so you potentialize it and then spend eternity actualizing it.
And spend eternity actualizing it, yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
And you can potentialize it here and now.
Yeah, just like that other thing the Father gives you, yeah. that adjuster. You know, he gives you this fragment of infinite deity. And when he does that, boom, are you a phenomenon of infinite actuality? No, it takes eternity to actualize the potential of that adjuster within you. Right. The Father potentializes, not doesn't actualize. The moment you think the Father actualizes, and then you read the Revelation and it tells you about adjusters, you're off into delusional la-la land for sure. Right?
Yep. But you can't actualize. You don't potentialize.
Oh my goodness, this is incredible news. God has given me a fragment of actuality. I am God. You know, I mean, no. He's given you a fragment of potentiality.
Right? Send out all the invites to your fusion.
And not only yes. And not only that, you know the thing about potentiality, right? When the actualization is in your hands, it's a double-edged sword. Right, so you know, you can wield the adjuster in destructivity mode as well as you can wield the adjuster in creativity mode. Okay, so I know that was a bit of a
good paragraph,
but but it's very important to
yes
to get this. So and they say, see, every creature of every evolving universe who aspires to do the Father's will, got to know what that means. It's nothing more or less. Right, see, if you're going to genuinely be a positive contribution to this co-creative phenomenon we're talking about here, you can't have some delusional notion that you're an infinite fragment of actuality. Humble, right? You need the humility. You see how it'll be easier to be humble if you remember that the Father is just potentializing you, not actualizing you. When you really keep that in mind, a number of things make sense. It's like, oh, that's why I'm not actually called an ascending son until I fuse. Right? Before that, I'm just called a faith son, a potential ascending son. It's a synonym, you know, for saying you're a faith son. Right? That's a potential, not an actuality.
Well, then when it says that to God, mm-hmm. all that potential has been realized, so to speak. You have actualized it in his eyes.
In eternity, where there's no time, there's no difference between potential and actual.
So God is already able to have experienced our actuality, so to speak.
Right, in terms of the Father,
the potential's there. We have to have we're finite. We have
the Father can only know you in eternity. He can't know you in time, right? To him, you are an eternal lighter. Right, so again, you know, thinking about, well, I'm not an eternal lighter that first time I synchronized with him on paradise. I'm a long ways. I'm not even a finaliter yet, right? I haven't even been inducted into the core of finality. That it's a just a humble about how much of a significant relationship you have, right? There's no direct relationship there because you're not fully in eternity where he is totally. Right? None of him is in time. So until you are totally in eternity, there can't be a direct relationship. It's like, well, but they talk about this. Yeah, so how does that work? If I'm not genuinely, purely like him in eternity, so I can have this direct relationship. How are we related?
Through the mother.
Through the mother. Right. Right. The mother, right, is what bridges the gap between eternity and time. Between, you know, the infinite and the finite. Right? Between the existential and the experiential. She's not just a horizontal ubiquity, right? When you think of mother in general, not just a given, you know, facet of mother deity, but the totality of the mother, right? It's vertical extent too, right? It bridges the vertical divide. This distinction is vital. If you're going to have this incredible relationship with the Father on paradise that first time, it's in relation to the Paradise Trinity and through the mother. It's in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. That's the only way two members of a cosmic system are connected to each other. Right? He's already done it. He's got himself in perfect cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. Always has. Been waiting, from your perspective, from past eternity, for you to get that first definitive cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity so that you can have a commonality and can relate one to another, okay? Through the individuality of the whole, right? And so you've done that, and in, you know, relatively short time, you're inducted into the core of the finality, and you acknowledge that cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. You take an oath to the Paradise Trinity, right? This is the physics, right? Ever since has there obtained the eternal pattern of coordinate participation. It's all the same pattern. And coordinate participation. That's how it happens. Okay? In relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. Okay, see, took us a whole hour to do those first two paragraphs. There's supposed to be something they're set apart by a large paragraph break, and they're obviously, what on earth are these about? This has nothing to do with Lucifer. You know, this has to do with the truth of you. Right? If you don't want to go down the Lucifer path,
right,
you need to be true. If you're false, if you're not like what these two paragraphs, when you reflect on them, get you to recognize, you will go down the Lucifer path. It's inescapable. Right? A false person goes down the Lucifer path. The only way to prevent that physics from playing out is to be true. Is to see yourself in. You know, Lucifer started to think that he was a part that didn't need a whole. Right? That's where he went astray. You know, and as we're about to read, because he was a part that didn't think it needed a whole, well, naturally, he thinks that he is the whole. And he tries to apply his will as if he were the whole rather than a part. See? Because you won't fundamentally totally get rid of the idea of the whole. You'll just make yourself the whole. That's self-righteousness. Right? We're about to see a self-righteous part exercises their will as if they were the whole.
Exaltation.
Right? That's what we're just about to read about. Okay, let's go forward here a bit.
Lucifer's folly was the attempt to do the non-doable, to short-circuit time in an experiential universe. Lucifer's crime was the attempted creative disenfranchisement of every personality in Satania, the unrecognized abridgment of the creator's personal, of the creature's personal participation, free will participation, in the long evolutionary struggle to attain the status of light and life, both individually and collectively. In so doing, this one-time sovereign of your system set the temporal purpose of his own will directly athwart the eternal purpose of God's will as it is revealed in the bestowal of free will upon all personal creatures. The Lucifer Rebellion thus threatened the maximum possible infringement of the free will choice of the ascenders and servers of the system of Satania, a threat forevermore to deprive every one of these beings of the thrilling experience of contributing something personal and unique to the slowly erecting monument to experiential wisdom, which will sometime exist as the perfected system of Satania. Thus does the Lucifer Manifesto, masquerading in the habiliments of liberty, stand forth in the clear light of reason as a monumental threat to consummate the theft of personal liberty, and to do it on a scale that has been approached only twice in all the history of Nebadon.
Okay, remember we commented on that, the fact of that, you know, there's been two other system rebellions, that's what they're referring to. That wasn't immediately obvious there at the end. You know, let's just deal with the rest of that, the last part of that paragraph. Thus does the Lucifer Manifesto, manifesto masquerading in the habiliments of liberty, right? The garments of liberty, the clothing of liberty. Remember, it's a sophistry, right? It's wrapped in spiritual candy, right? They're literally using, see, they're describing it that way. The wrapped in spiritual candy is the habiliments of liberty. Liberty is a spirit concept. So there it is right there, just that, describing it like I have been, you know, and very directly. You take the fallacy and you wrap it in that seductive spiritual concept, so that, you know, you're drawn in by spirit gravity, the habiliments of liberty. All right, and so see how, you know, like I was saying, there's this attempt at the theft of liberty. And see what he's doing, right? And instead of it being, you know, there's all of these individual measures of free will that eventually work together in this coordinate way to duplicate in time the central universe of eternal perfection, things and beings. Saying, no, there isn't going to be a bunch of parts that reach up to the whole, you know, and through the individuality of the whole, coordinate together. I am the whole. Right? There will be none of that phenomenon. You are all going to be subservient to my will. Right? There's not going to be any cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. Okay. See, the temporal purpose of his own will directly athwart the eternal purpose of God's will.
Right? I did it my way.
See, when you go to that actual purposing, right, that's going into a mindful phenomenon. And like you were pointing out, the mind, the whole, right, the mother, right? And so, see, that's, you know, it's a very long paragraph, but you should be able to appreciate it after we did all that work to set it up, you know, yeah, off those first two paragraphs. See, that's what they're describing. It's just, but it's only going to be an attempt, because who made that will free? You know, the Universal Father. And so, I mean, this effort to thwart this is impossible, right? I mean, he's attempting to do the non-doable, like they said there, right? The only way that he can attempt to do what he did is because he has free will, and nothing can prevent that. You know, any more than what he's going to do is going to prevent anyone else from having free will, right? But see, so his folly, you know, what leads, you know, leads him to iniquity is not that he actually stole liberty, but he had the thought that he would or could. He went to iniquity with that potential, not an actuality of the theft of liberty. Right? It's when you think about it, like, well, that seems like a kind of a minor infraction, doesn't it? I mean, if it didn't actually actualize, if he didn't actually steal liberty, I mean, should he be, you know, executed for that? I mean, all Eve did was, you know, go to the other one, go to this fall. All Eve did is just, you know, have a few moments of delight with, you know, with a Noddite. I mean, really? I mean, they have to lose their eternal or their, you know, immortal nature, and, you know, they're in default, and, you know, all their children are taken away. I mean, isn't that like overkill?
Give them the axe.
See, again, no, I mean, you know, you're thinking, well, there's the way and then there's my way, and I think my way is better. That's the problem. And all you have to do is just think that, and you're going astray. No, there's, everyone is in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. The whole, period. There is no other whole. You're either in cooperative subordination to that, or you don't exist.
Somehow he must have convinced himself that if he was subordinate, that he wasn't really free.
Yeah.
The only way he could be free is if he wasn't subordinate.
Yeah. That's
a struggle we all have.
Right, that's
it. I mean, nobody's.
Does it sound like you're free if you're in cooperative subordination? Does that sound like someone who's free if they're subordinate? No, it sounds like you're enslaved.
Yeah.
None of us are an island universe, not even the Universal Father. You have to just accept that fact.
Clarence Thomas's father, where else would you live? Where else would you live? You know? Mm-hmm. There's nowhere else.
Right.
There's no other universe.
Right. Either you exist in this universe or you don't exist.
Period.
There is no other option. You don't get to create a parallel universe that is you. There's only one universe. Was there a question somewhere? Oh, over here. Yeah.
So, you know, I never really thought too much about this, the things that were taken away from us, what they talk about here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, the experience of contributing something personally unique to the slowly erecting monument of, you know, the system being perfected. Because by the time it gets there, I'll probably be long gone out of the system and everything. But you never really think so much about, you know, your little part that you contribute here, you know, in time, that you exist. And the experience that is, that's all that you're really contributing,
yeah,
in a way, as they talk here, he was going to deprive us of that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of beautiful in a way to see. And when you see that, what they talk about, it sort of gives you a different perspective on what you're doing while you're here.
Yes,
you know what I'm saying?
Yes, and even way, way in the distant future, when you're a finaliter and you're working in the third super universe, you're still connected to this local system.
Okay.
Why?
Because you came from here?
Because the mother.
Mother.
Right? Right? And because, yes. I mean, how? It's through the mother. And why is because this is, I mean, you are forever a part of this local system, which is tied to a specific world in Havona. You'll never be of patterned after a different one of the billion worlds of Havona. You're forever patterned after that one world of Havona. And you are forever synchronized with the things. You're a being that's synchronized with the things of this local system. Forever.
And this local universe and this super-universal, that kind of thing.
But most, but see, but I mean, just, you know, boiling
and
it.
And this planet, even?
Right. But just, you know, most specifically, you know, remember, it's, right, yeah, you know, one Havona world gets expressed as seven systems, and this, you know, right, one in each super-universe, right? So, I mean, that's the fundamental nugget, you know, like a world in Havona is a fundamental nugget, is a local system. And you, see, and even though you leave, you don't really leave. I mean, think about what the mother can do when you leave the local universe, and you think, well, I'm going to be cut off from the spirit of truth now. No, you're not. Because is mother only within your local universe? No, mother is ubiquitous, vertically and horizontally. All right? The reflective mother spirits of the super universe can uphold the spirit of truth as well, like they say. And so you continue to be encircled in the spirit of truth even when you leave the local universe. I mean, right now, it's being given to you on the substrate of our creative mother spirit. Once you leave the local universe, it's given to you on the substrate of the reflective mother spirit of the super universe, the mother of the bigger whole, and et cetera, the bigger and bigger mothers, you know, on forever. See, so, you know, because of that ubiquity of the mother, you can't really leave. It's like Don was just saying, exactly how are you going to get outside? how could you actually be disconnected? No. I mean, mother goes all the way up to the infinite mother spirit. There isn't any boundary to mother deity. It's infinite in scope, horizontally and vertically. You're always within the mother. And that's a wonderful comfort, but see, within the child, and the father is outside. You know, that there's some of the Son, you know, it's the eternal Mother Son and the infinite Mother Spirit, right? I mean, there's some of the Son and the Spirit that has a withinness, but the Father is pure existential deity. The Father is purely God, the God of transcendence, no God of immanence. Right? So, you know, you have to be ready to allow that to happen. Once you finally make the Mother infinite like that, okay, she's ubiquitous in an infinite sense within. That means there's no place for the Father within. Right? The Father is in the infinite without, and the Mother is in the infinite within. And so you have to finally allow that.
Yep. So the Father idea through the Son is as close as we're getting.
Right. See, the Father can indirectly get inside if you bring the two facets of deity, Father type deity and Son type deity, together as one, and remember, there's also Mother there. You know, the other parent of a Creator Son is the eternal Mother Son, right? So, I mean, that allows indirectly for the Father to get within because of that mother deity. Without it, there couldn't be a relationship to within.
It's just like
ascension. Okay? See, so, you know, the Father would like to have an indirect way to get within via a Son, so he connects to Son-type deity. Son-type deity is existential deity. So he can relate existential to existential. But that other kind of existential deity, Son-type deity, can bond together as one with Mother-type deity. And see, so that's, so it's this multi-step process to get within indirectly.
So two things are related to the same thing, related to each other.
Right. See, so through that, eventually through the individuality of the whole, the mother deity can get within and have a relationship, an indirect relationship to you. And it's just, everything is like that. Like we said, the personality circuit. Again, what's it encircuited through? There's the Father node that's without. There's the you node within. And what links the two? Mother deity. Right? That's the conductor for that circuit.
This whole pattern. Straight down to us.
It's just, The same, see, the same physics, just adding just one basic new physics and just duplicate it, you know, its consequences over and over and over. And you can finally understand without any magic. See, once there's something between, there's you don't need magic to bridge any gulfs anymore. You know, or if you've got something that's ubiquitous, a part itself doesn't need to be ubiquitous. A part doesn't need to be delocalized and magical, right? You know, the part can be the part. The whole is the whole. You know, you don't have a physics of parts that are also wholes, and hence magical parts. They're just parts.
Yeah. So how's what he did a theft of liberty?
Okay, as I was saying, it wasn't a theft of liberty. It was attempted theft of liberty. That's why I stressed that up front. See, he
it says here to consummate the
right. Yeah, right here. What does it say?
Theft of personal liberty. Right?
Yeah, as a monumental threat to consummate. It's just a threat. It's just an attempt. You can't actually do it. That which the Father has joined together, no man or creature can put us under. You're not. No one can steal liberty from you. Right?
It's a hoax.
That's why you have it. We hold these truths to be self-evident. that's why one of those is liberty. I mean, that's an unalienable right. Nothing can take it away. Just like the Declaration says. Right?
And you're talking about true liberty, not...
But the attempt to do it is what he got in trouble. Because it's like, well, yeah, but he failed. He can't do anything but fail. But yes, but by attempting that, what have you done? The only way that you attempt that is by becoming self-righteous instead of righteous. Right? He's made himself unreal. That's his crime. He's not real anymore. He's not part of the cosmic system.
Plus the way they describe it. I mean, his will is described as the temporal purposes.
Right.
There's nothing grand about his purposes. They're temporal.
Right.
And then what do they describe that has been a thwart upon? The eternal purposes.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and thank you for getting me back because we got off. I was going to just make that statement. See, notice how it's, you know, it's the eternal purpose of God's will. It's not just God's will. You've taken it to mind, like I started to say. I mean, you're talking about the way, not merely the will. The mother.
It's the way.
Right? Right? That, you know, the way, the eternal pattern of coordinate participation, right? That's the way. That's the only way to do anything. That's the pattern in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. The attempt to thwart that, right, to stand apart from the whole and to just believe that there can be some sort of real connection, one part to another, apart from this subordination, so that you can be truly free, quote-unquote. Right, not subordinate. See, that's the problem. That's what he started to think. Okay, so I think we've got that. Let's see. Maybe let me just make sure there's a huge long paragraph. Is there anything else I wanted to bring out there? Let's see. Notice the attempt. I mean, thus threatened the maximum possible infringement. You know, just notice how. Because again, he's attempting to do the non-doable, right? So he didn't do it, but he's his crime, right? The crime is to attempt it, to think self-righteously. The other way of looking at what this, besides what we've been saying, is to short-circuit time in an experiential universe. You see, so think about that. In the way we've just been describing, about having the whole in place, you know, in the picture. It's not just, remember, he wants light and life now. What do we want, light and life? When do we want it now? That's what he's out there with his sign chanting, okay? And yeah, so in that simple sense, you can think of short-circuiting time in an experiential universe. Okay, but see, what are you really thinking there? You're not thinking, I want to short-circuit time in an experiential universe. What you're thinking is, we don't need to go through this long, drawn-out process of bringing everything together through the individuality of the whole. Screw the individuality of the whole. Let's just do it directly so that it doesn't have to go through that temporal experiential deity phenomenon of the mother. Let's do it existentially, part to part. Right? It's two different ways of saying the same thing, see? The mother is experiential deity. The father is existential deity. Right? You want to do it existentially instead of experientially through the individuality of the whole. It's like, yes, but it takes forever because you can't just go part to part. I mean, once you go through the individuality of the whole to get to another part, you also go to every other part, in the whole cosmic system. And so every part has to be in the proper coordination for you to have this relationship you want with the one part. It takes forever.
What else we got to do? That's what eternity's for.
Right.
Well, he looked at it and he just said, well, wouldn't this be better just to do it this way?
Right. Why is it that, a particular, local universe, say, or a particular creature in the grand universe can't go all the way to transcending the finite by themselves? Mm-hmm. The whole thing has to go across the threshold at the same time, right? Because it's all happening in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole, right? No part can do it unto itself.
I can see him in the meetings in the relation deck, the other system guys saying, hey, we're already halfway to light and life. What's going on with you? I'm just teasing.
Is it?
What about trinitized beings? Because it says something to the effect that they're not of this age.
Right. So when a being is embraced by the Trinity, it's brought into a fiat transcendence state. It becomes a direct nugget of the whole, as it were. Rather than a part still working up into relationship with the whole. Like say you're a mighty messenger, like the author of this paper. Right? You get all the way up to finality and you think, well, I still have a whole process, of penetrating to completion, No, the Trinity grabs a hold of you and does all that by fiat. Gives you that completion by fiat. So you become an agent of the top down rather than the bottom up.
Not a short process either, right? No.
No, I mean, but see, you go on unchanging, basically, from that point on, because you are a measure of the end from the beginning, as it were, okay, by fiat, right? So some endness is put into you. So obviously you're not going to continue to move towards endness. You just have the endness inherent in you. But obviously there's going to be some very subtle, complicated, transcendent, role you're playing in everything. You aren't the whole, you're still a part. But you function in this different way. And like I said, you basically are functioning a little bit more in a top-down sort of a engagement than a bottom-up engagement. All right. Okay. Let's see. Everyone's brain is probably hurting, so let's see. Let's continue on here.
In short, what God has given men and angels, Lucifer would have taken away from them. That is, the divine privilege of participating in the creation of their own destinies and of the destiny of this local system of inhabited worlds. Should I keep going?
Yeah, read the other one too.
No being in all the universe has the rightful liberty to deprive any other being of true liberty, the right to love and be loved, the privilege of worshiping God and of serving his fellows.
Okay, so again, you know, interpret those two paragraphs in this context of we've been pounding and pounding on the, you know, this relation to the whole, this you know, genuine trueness of nature. So the first of those two little paragraphs, you know, so they're just summing it up, you know, like they're saying, in short, see, and again, he would have taken away from them. But of course, I mean,
he didn't.
He can't do the non-doable, right? But just, you know, the thought of doing this, that you can just skip the whole experiential process through the individuality of the whole and do it direct, existentially, part to part, by fiat. What do we want? Pick your favorite, you know, idealistic vision. When do we want it? Now. Okay, that's the Lucifer rebellion. Thinking that you can somehow do it without that complex wholeness phenomenon in play, and how long it takes for parts to be whole, like, right? The impatience, you know, comes in. See, impatience comes from favoring the father parent over the mother parent. Right, that's where your impatience comes from. You have this consecration of will, but you don't have that long-term consecration of mind in play. If all you've got is the one parent, if you're spiritual enough, it's a foregone conclusion that you're going to become impatient and you're going to unwittingly join the Lucifer rebellion. The other parent is what keeps you from unwittingly joining the Lucifer rebellion.
It seems to me, if you're going to live for eternity anyway, why are you in a hurry?
Right.
Yeah, what do we got to
do? Mom would definitely stop you from doing it, but she'd lay down the law that you can't join that rebellion.
Unless right. You want a meeting with the executioner.
Right, and see, the only thing you have to add to that is like, okay, I'm going to live for eternity, but I'm going to be growing through all that, rather than, I've got this consecration of will, I have the perfect actuality, my mind is innately divine. See, that's it, you know, you got to have that very direct, I know, but you see.
But it still means, like, you know, a lot of time, as you, even us here as human beings, you know, Jesus was never in a hurry.
Yeah.
I always seem to be in a hurry. You know, I don't know what it is. Maybe growing up in New York City, you know, you're going to be in a hurry, you don't get anywhere.
Well,
there's a whole thing about that that's got, right. That's a deeper thing.
Than right. It's more than just, you know, being in a hurry is more than just the incessant clamoring thing.
More than just being in a hurry.
Because you're encircled in the Holy Spirit, because you're a person and not just an animal with incessant clamoring, that incessant clamoring has been, by grace, uplifted into a genuine impatience relative to experiential deity. Experiential deity is an annoyance that you would like to shove away. You know, again, that's why, I mean, and it's only now that we have the potential to really start getting a relationship to the upper domain of the hourglass in a more conscious way, because of what Michael did 2,000 years ago, because of the spiritual uplift, that we need the other parent. We need to consciously understand that there's this other parent that I have to equally conform to. There isn't just one parent in his delightful existentialness, which unto me becomes delusion. Right? That's why they're finally giving us the other parent, the first revelation of the other parent, because we need it to keep us grounded so that we don't get ahead of ourselves and we don't become genuinely impatient, genuinely rejecting, dismissive of our other parent.
I would like to dismiss the sevenfold because you can't believe the annoyance I'm going through.
Yeah, I mean,
again,
No, good point. I mean, for those in the webinar, let me just bring in that quickly. She brought up the sevenfold. You know, notice Lucifer brought up the sevenfold too as a point of supreme annoyance to him. Right? That this whole hierarchy and there's all the complexity and you got to deal with all of these ones down on the lower level and then there's the ones on the level up above that and then there's, you know, it's like, forget about all that complexity, he says. You know, let's just do it. Right? See, the fact that the whole is so vast is sort of brought to a focus in the complexity of that hierarchy that is the sevenfold. It's how that wholeness is identified with the creature. Remember, the sevenfold is creature identified deity. It puts that complexity in your face, and that's why Lucifer was, you know, so annoyed by it, right? Because it made what he wanted to avoid hard to avoid, right? If all there was the intangible mother deity, right, it would be easier to avoid. You know, when it's made direct through the sevenfold, it becomes a foreign potentate, right?
Wasn't the universal father as such? It was the universal father of the sevenfold. That he was denied.
Yeah, I mean,
the universal father's
ready. Right, technically, you know, we need to understand that all you're going to be initially relating to is the universal father in the sevenfold. You can't do anything else, you know, until sometime after endless cycles of eternity. Right? You know, right? Yeah. I mean that's the whole point, that, you know, you're getting into relationship to the universal father in the sevenfold there in Havana. And you don't have to have any ability to transcend that and do it in some direct way yourself, like I was describing. Yeah. And right. And so Lucifer. Right. I mean, technically, that's the same way. That's why I said it all boils down to, you know, you've got the God of Liberty on the one hand, and God the Sevenfold on the other hand. You know, that's the battle in heaven between those two sides. Okay, let's see. Oh yeah, see if we can get back here and finish this up. Okay, so that second paragraph, that last paragraph, is important to reflect on in the context of this wholeness we've been talking about. No being in all the universe has the rightful liberty to deprive any other being of true liberty. Okay, so, and then they give you a couple things to think about to make sure that you don't think too simplistically about it. So we've been stressing true liberty, okay, so this relation to the whole. And then they toss in the right to love and be loved. That's another thing. Now, have you thought about love in this context? In order to genuinely love, you have to be in this definitive relationship to the whole. If you try to love part to part directly, rather than part through the individuality of the whole to the other part, it won't be true love, it will be false love. And it will be destructive, not constructive.
Yeah. Chris, you have a question?
Yep.
But you can't depend on other people being in relationship to a whole. You still have to try to love that person.
Right,
you don't really know if it's real or not half the time, but you at least have to.
But see, that's the whole point I'm trying to make here. You go, I still have to try to love that other person even if they... No. You're getting ahead of yourself. Your first job is not to love other people. Your first job is self-mastery. Right? Loving someone else is an actuality. You got to potentialize that first, and that's what I'm trying to get at.
But it goes hand in hand with trying for self-mastery, too. So you have to ask.
Can't do the
one. But I'm just trying to, you know, see again our impatience. We get ahead of ourselves, right? God is love. I want to do that Father thing. I want to love. Well, you got to, you know, you've got to supply the favorable conditions first. Because it's all, you're only going to genuinely love someone else through the individuality of the whole, in relation to the whole, and through the individuality of the whole. That's why they're bringing it in here, right? So you've got to do that first. See, you go, well, you know, this whole bit about deprive any other being of true liberty, okay, why is there not just a period there, and why are they throwing these non sequiturs again? They want you to think in this context about these other things you like to think about, like loving and being loved. To do that in truth, okay, you can't be in that mode like Lucifer was, where you think, well, I'm just going to do it. Right? Part to part. No, you're not. Not really. Right? And same with the privilege of worshiping God and serving his fellows. In order to worship God, right, the level of worship is the sixth level of meaning. Right? That, you know, when you're going to finally synchronize to the cosmos. Right? Again, if you're this whole bit about being in relation to the whole, one way that you're in relationship to the whole is a fact called worship. Okay? And worship is self-forgetting. You see, can you let go of the self and just synchronize with the whole? Be a synchronization with the whole, as opposed to a self that is synchronized with the whole, right? As opposed to saying, I'm worshiping God. Right? See, that's not self-forgetting.
Similar serving is almost self.
Yeah, right, well. Right. See, yeah, that's what I'm saying. See, that's why they put those together like that, right? Can you get the self out of the way enough so that you can, there's favorable conditions so that you're, there's a genuine phenomenon in play. You're actually in relation to the whole. And you're going to go through the individuality of the whole to get to others, to serve them, to connect to God, whatever. Love your fellow man. All these things. They're trying to just get you to think about this same physics again. No matter what it is, stop thinking that you can do it directly. You have to be in cooperative subordination to the Paradise Trinity. You have to let go of some of your delusions of sovereignty, right? And be in subordination. You can't be delusionally free.
Which doesn't mean you stay in bed and do nothing all day.
Yeah, and right, no. But it gets back to that. You're going to have liberty, but it's going to be liberty in law. See how we're really describing the law thing? What is the law of the cosmos? Right? Ever since has there obtained the eternal pattern of coordinate participation, right? Your liberty has to be in that law in relation to the whole and through the individual whole. That's the law of the cosmos. Anything else, you're unwittingly going off in the Lucifer track, thinking that you can do it apart from that law of the cosmic system. It's just the law of the cosmic system. It's the way it works. Yeah. Okay, so that's what they're getting at. All right, we should be able to do the time lag of justice here too.
Three, the time lag of justice. The moral will creatures of the evolutionary worlds are always bothered with the unthinking question as to why the all-wise creators permit evil and sin. They fail to comprehend that both are inevitable if the creature is to be truly free. The free will of evolving man or exquisite angel is not a mere philosophic concept, a symbolic ideal. Man's ability to choose good or evil is a universe reality. This liberty to choose for oneself is an endowment of the supreme rulers, and they will not permit any being or group of beings to deprive a single personality in the wide universe of this divinely bestowed liberty. not even to satisfy such misguided and ignorant beings in the enjoyment of this misnamed personal liberty.
Okay, do the last, you know, the misnamed personal liberty. Remember, we talked about that, that whole bit about the battle cry of the Lucifer Rebellion, right? It's actually self-assertion that they're talking about, not, you know, genuine liberty, personal liberty. And again, see how that ties back to, you know, it's nothing more or less about that, you know, the doing of the will of God. It's only about the inner life. See? You go astray when you think you've got something to do. It has something to do with the outer life. You know, just like here, your personal liberty has something to do with the outer life. No, that's self-assertion, and that's subject to, you know, all kinds of issues.
Does service have to do with the outer life?
Yeah, service definitely has to do with the outer life. You know, so, you know, in order to serve someone else, you've got to bring your relationship to the cosmos in the upper domain down through a mastered lower domain so that it can go out and engage someone well. And at that lower domain is your, as the revelators call it, your associating mechanism. It's your means of associating the real personal you in the upper domain with the external world. Right? And, you know, if it's not mastered, you know, you can't link them properly. You can't get the inputs in properly. You can't put your outputs out properly, like service.
All about you.
Right? You will serve falsely.
Like, right? Self in, self out.
Right? An unmastered self, doesn't matter how much you desire to serve truthfully, you'll serve falsely. You know, you'll put it out falsely. You have a good motive, but you'll have a false intention. Right? And it won't work. What goes out is service. The service will actually be detrimental.
Yeah.
And just the way it is. Without that mastered self. Okay, now, we talked about this earlier. Notice how it comes back around here. Look at the beginning there. So the moral will creatures of the evolutionary worlds are always bothered with the unthinking question as to why the all-wise creators permit evil and sin. Okay, first of all, remember that came up in the preface. Remember how they said in the preface that gods neither create evil nor permit sin and rebellion? Remember we talked about that permit thing. It appears that they permit sin and rebellion, or as they're saying here, it appears that they permit evil and sin. But they don't really. What do they really do? The gods bestow personality and respect it. That's what they really do. Now, but it won't appear that way to you. You have to just logically recognize that, the reality of it, because it's going to appear to you that they're permitting evil and sin. You've got to know the reality that's behind the appearance. They aren't really permitting it.
No, they're giving you the choice.
Right. All they've done is just, you know, there's free will. Like they say right here in this, you know, they fail to comprehend that both are inevitable if the creature is to be truly free. Right, like they say right there.
So if they stopped you from doing it, you wouldn't have free will, right?
Right. Right. Okay, so, well, now what did I just say about, you know, about how you have to get to the reality behind the appearance? Okay, when they say that these creatures are always bothered with the unthinking question, are you going, well, unthinking question? How can I form a question if I'm not thinking? I mean, are they saying how can something that has no consciousness, you know, be bothered?
Well, I don't think they're saying that.
I know they are. I'm putting it. Okay, I'm trying to get you to the reductio ad absurdum. I'm trying to get you to, you know, it's like, okay, well, that must not be what they mean. What I'm making a false initial assumption here somehow, because that doesn't make sense when I try to think it through like that. What am I doing? You know, what's my initial assumption that's not valid here? When they're saying the unthinking question, they mean just mere thinking? No. They mean reflective thinking. The only way to know the reality behind the appearance is through reflective thinking. Right? The logic of reflective thinking, like I said, if you step back and reflect on the situation, it becomes logical, it becomes self-evident what's really going on, that all they do is bestow and respect personality and its free will. They're not really permitting evil and sin, but that'll never be how it appears to you. No mere thinking mind can know that. Only a reflective thinking mind can get to that. That's what they're trying to get. Real thinking, reflective thinking, not just mere thinking. You know, of your incessantly clamoring, right, self. It's thinking, and observing, and rationalizing all those observations. And you've got to put the pause button on all that.
You have to have the favorable conditions.
Right, again, there's all, right. But just recognize that, you know, you've got to step back.
And what do you think they use inevitable versus potential?
We're right there. They fail to comprehend that both are inevitable, right? That they are an inescapable fact of it. If you have free will and you're not innately perfect,
there it is.
It's inescapable.
You may not have an
inescapable. Right. Right. Yeah. It's just the way it is. I keep stressing, there's no way to give us creativity without also giving us destructivity potential. Okay? Because again, they're not giving us the actuality. They're giving you the potentiality, and the potentiality can be actualized in two different ways: creatively or destructively. It's just the way it is.
Well,
right, there's some things that are just inevitable. So that last little thing, you know, not even to satisfy such misguided and ignorant means. I mean, again, there is free will, period, and it's absolutely free. There just isn't any relativity to it. Okay.
Although conscious and wholehearted identification with evil, sin, is the equivalent of non-existence, annihilation, there must always intervene between the time of such personal identification with sin and the execution of the penalty, the automatic result of such a willful embrace of evil, a period of time of sufficient length to allow for such an adjudication of such an individual's universe status as will prove entirely satisfactory to all related universe personalities, and which will be so fair and just as to win the approval of the sinner himself.
That's all one sentence.
Yep, we got some mouthfuls here. Okay. We can't unpack all of this until we read the other paragraph here. But
I'll read it.
No, because there's some things we want to do first. That are just in this paragraph. Okay, so although conscious and wholehearted identification with evil, and you know, it's like, what is this weird parenthetical structure that they've got going here? Okay, so they want you to kind of think of it in a fuller sense. Okay, so now, like we talked about last time, so that if I have the conscious identification with evil, that's sin. If I have the wholehearted identification with sin, that's iniquity. Okay. See, so this double construct is allowing you to think about all the complexities of it. And then in parallel is the equivalent of non-existence, parenthetically, annihilation. Okay, so now, Do any of you remember one of those things that I told you to kind of work on burning into your head in thinking about a parallel to error, evil, sin, and iniquity from paper 118? Error was self-confusing. Evil was, does anyone remember? Self...
destroying.
No. Probably. Self-disrupting.
Disrupting.
Evil is self-disrupting. Error, sin. Okay, sin is self-destroying, right? And iniquity is self-destruction. Self-confusing, self-disrupting, self-destroying, self-destruction. Okay, they want you to think about those right here. So they've got the parallel, the evil with non-existence. Okay, so evil is self-disrupting. Okay, if there's, in the wholehearted mode there, if there's complete self-disruption, right, that's non-existence. Right, complete self-disruption. But more parallel to self-destroying with sin is the word annihilation. You know, that literally means to nothing. To nothingness, you know, including the suffix there. Right? You know, and nihil, right, you see there, the nothing, you know, and the an prefix is, you know, is meaning to. Okay, so see, you know, to take something to nothing in the self-destruction, right, self-destroying to wholeheartedly to self-destruction. They're just wanting you to reflect on how those two words have a differential between them that's like that differential between self-disrupting and self-destroying. Like I said, see, it's important to have those things, you know, always at the ready. It's like, well, if I thought about them like that, oh, yeah, that makes sense. That's why I gave you those. It's very handy at times, like right here, to appreciate what they're doing. You know, so, you know, they're not saying that evil and sin are synonyms, you know, non-existence and annihilation are synonyms. It's a very, you know, it's a complex structure, like I was saying, right? Okay, so be able to, you know, reflect in that more complicated way like I just did about, you know, some of these sentences. There's other places where they do that kind of parenthetical complexification of a sentence. So it's less linear. Let's see. Okay, so this whole bit about, you've got this interval. So you go all the way to iniquity, basically, but there's this delay. A period of time of sufficient length to allow for such an adjudication of such an individual's universe status as will prove entirely satisfactory to all related universe personalities. Remember, they're always doing things like going through the whole rigmarole of building a body for a soul that's empty, you know, putting that empty soul, right? You know, the resurrection of the unjust thing. You know, right? They always go through all of it in a very open fashion so that no one thinks that something's being hidden. There's no sleight of hand going on, no deception going on. Right? So they want to, it's all going to prove entirely satisfactory to all related universe personalities, and which will be so fair and just as to win the approval of the sinner himself. Okay, that last part, let's read the final paragraph and we'll talk about that.
But if this universe rebel against the reality of truth and goodness refuses to approve the verdict, and if the guilty one knows in his heart the justice of his condemnation but refuses to make such confession, then must the execution of sentence be delayed in accordance with the discretion of the Ancients of Days. And the Ancients of Days refuse to annihilate any being until all moral values and all spiritual realities are extinct, both in the evildoer and in all related supporters and possible sympathizers.
Okay, again, before we get to the, let's do that last little bit. all in all related supporters and possible sympathizers. You know, that one always gets you. You know, it's like
a lot of bleeding hearts.
Whoa, you know. I mean, right. So that gets you to think about, you know, how this could be a time lag for this all to play out in the system. So see, you have to, you know, again, just like we talked about how you can't have some part of the grand universe transcending to absonity by itself, you know, the whole of the grand universe has to do it, all things and all beings together. You got this, you know, that in microcosm here, see, right? The wholeness of this rebellion phenomenon, you know, has to be in existence, and then it as a whole is adjudicated, as it were, right? Now, obviously, you know, they've got words there that we can't pick apart very precisely. Possible sympathizers? It's like, well, how do I know the difference between possible and, you know, not possible sympathizers? Well, you know, we can't. But those on high, you know, sort this all out. And, you know, at some point, it there's a wholeness there, you know. It's like, well, what about 100 trillion years later, you know, in another super universe? Couldn't there be someone that's still, in some way, you know, it gets complete, okay? And they can discern that. But they're just trying to remind you there's a complex whole in relation to a whole phenomenon, okay? Okay, now about this individual that goes to iniquity. Okay. In the previous paragraph, we used the expression wholehearted rather than I used complete, you know, as a synonym one time. But notice they use wholehearted. You know, wholehearted sin, okay, is iniquity. But notice there's the word heart there. Okay? There is still an upper domain of the hourglass. There's a heart. There's a temple within. Now you're using the word heart. Right, there's the upper domain of the hourglass. So yes, it's devoid, it's been emptied of all meaning and value, but it's still there. There's still a heart. There's still a personality identified. There's still an encirclement in the Holy Spirit. And again, in this final paragraph, and if the guilty one knows in his heart, okay, well, you can't know anything in your heart unless you have a heart,
right.
Unless you have an upper domain. Okay. So what's this final step? Why is there this delay from being technically iniquitous to actually being exterminated? There's one final step, one final volitional act that has to be taken by that iniquitous person. They have to make a final choice. Use their personality to evaporate the upper domain of the hourglass. To cut themselves off completely from the whole. Remember, it's the mother that makes that upper domain of the hourglass. The father then uses it to identify personality to and put an adjuster within, but it's a mother that, you know, that makes that, this relation to the whole and the individual through the individuality of the whole. The final step is to eliminate the upper domain, to choose to no longer be encircled in the Holy Spirit, if you will. And hence, there's no longer a personality identified because there's nothing for it to identify to. There has to be that final personal act when the personality is still engaged. Okay? And only then, when there's nothing left but a lower domain of the hourglass, there's no upper domain anymore, it's not personal anymore, only then do the executioners recycle the energy.
Like an animal.
Right? You're just technically, an impersonal phenomenon then. Yep?
Well, yeah, I don't quite read it that way.
You got a different book.
He refuses to approve the word.
Right. Right. I know it doesn't say that directly, what I'm saying. He's just saying what it says directly. But refuses to make such confession Right? Again, I'm trying to just, what, in terms of the physics of it, what's going on? See, as long as he refuses, I mean, there's refusability. There's will. Right? As long as that individual is still a person that can refuse, they're not executed. Right? That's all I'm trying to do is just kind of give you what's between the lines. Right? There's the appearance of it, you know, that he's not willing to say, yep, it's totally just, and I should be exterminated. I let go. And he has to make that final choice to let go.
Isn't there something there if it says he knows, let's see, the guilty one knows in his heart the justice of his condemnation?
Mm-hmm.
That means he's got to have a differential right and wrong somewhere, right?
Right. Well, no, I mean, it's just a matter of he knows that there's nothing left inside of him that's cosmos-like. He recognizes that. I mean, that was his whole point, right? Trying to make himself not like the whole, right? Not like the cosmos. And, you know, and he admits that. Yes, okay, I have achieved what I set out to do, right?
I kind of grasp.
But I will not admit that that's not a valid parallel reality. I will not admit that there is only one reality, and I'm either of it or I don't exist. Until he's willing to let go of that. Yeah. See. So, but it's the universe rebel against the reality of truth. See, the reality of truth, the reality of the whole.
Right.
See, reality of truth and goodness refuses to approve the verdict. Right.
Here we go. Free will choice.
Right. See. Yeah. That was the point I was just going to make. See. Exactly. See. I mean, you what do the gods do? They bestow and respect free will. Okay, that's the rule. Right. So it's got to play out all the way to the end. Now, next time when we read the subsequent section here, we'll talk about an exception to the rule. Okay, but. This is the rule that's in place. Okay, but you've got to bring justice and mercy together. You can't think about it all one-sided. Okay, and that's what this subsequent section is about. But we'll get to that next time. But anyway, just so that's the deal, right? It's just notice, all of a sudden they're using the word heart. See, just notice that. That's the clue. They're trying to get you to recognize it. They don't spoon feed it to you, but they've done everything but. Just notice that all of a sudden they're using the word heart. They haven't been using the word heart before. Why did they suddenly start using the word heart? So they're trying to get you to remind you about, I've actually got that domain that the mother has constructed, that a personality is identified with. Yes, it's full of nothingness, but it's still it's still a something that can be full, even if it's full of nothingness, right? There's a domain, there's the temple within, there's the heart. That's still there. The final act is to use your free will to destroy the vessel. You've already destroyed the contents. You've got to take that last step and destroy the vessel that those contents used to be in. All right, so that's, and then and only then do the executioners do something with it. All right. all right, so next time we'll bring in the fuller picture and get both the justice and the mercy together, and we'll see how you've got some complexity sometimes that you've got to think about. All right. So we'll do that next time. And like I said, start working on kind of committing some of these things, you know, to your toolbox. You know, like that self-confusing, self-disrupting, you know, things like that. The doing the will of God is nothing more or less. You know, get some of those things in your toolbox so that you can always bring those to bear on properly interpreting what you're reading. All right, let's take a moment, everyone.